Good morning. It is Kale and Company live here on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Great to have you with us here on a Wednesday morning. And we are presented by Northeast Delta Dental with individual and family plans designed to fit your lifestyle. Learn more and find your plan at DeltaDentalCoversMe.com. There's a lot of planning that goes into a show like this, ladies and gentlemen, and we have laid out a master plan today. No pun intended. You'll find out why I said no pun intended in a second. Today is Golfer's Day, also known as Golf Day, and we have brought in to our studio here this morning one of the top golfers, if not the top golfer in the state of New Hampshire, Jim Silley. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ken. Thanks for having me.
It is great to have you with us. I mean, these plans just work out amazingly, don't they?
It's funny how everything comes together like that, huh?
And tomorrow is the start of the Masters in Augusta.
88th Masters.
All right, who's winning? Who am I going to put my $5 on DraftKings?
Be hard to not... Be hard to bet against Scottie Scheffler right now. He's
on fire, huh?
He makes putts. Nobody beats him.
There you go. You know what do they say, Jim? Drive for show and putt for dough.
I mean that is true, and I think that's been a career for me because I don't hit it the longest. So it's in amateur golf. That's the thing where I've had success.
Yeah, in putting. Yeah. On the green.
Yeah, on the green.
Yeah, yeah. So I know you drive the ball a lot farther than I do. There's no doubt about that. But Jim Silley, realtor, coach, amazing golfer, and you are in the real estate business now. When did you get started in that?
2011.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, it was the same year that I won the New Hampshire Amateur. It was kind of, my daughter likes to say it's the same year she was born, but okay. we'll go with priorities, right?
So 2011, you won it once, just once?
I've won the Amateur once. I lost in the finals 2 years ago.
Yeah,
in a pretty good match, but
and this year it's at Concord, right?
It is at Concord this year. Very excited about that. I the last time it was at Concord was the first time that Bob Mielkar's retired from amateur golf. I think that this time might be his last time retiring from amateur golf when it's back there again. But I lost in the semifinals that year. It was the year after I had won. It was 2012. So it's nice to have it back in Concord and a course that I'm pretty familiar with.
So Bob will be playing this year.
As far as I know, yeah I've heard that he's in the field.
He has won it on several occasions, I know.
Nine.
Nine?
Yeah.
Wow, that is something. And, of course, guys like Phil Pleat, they won it multiple times. Yeah. And ultimately, you will win it multiple times.
Well, we would like to think that, you know.
But you're still a young man, you know.
Yeah, but my midsection's catching up to the elderly population, so I need to get a little more flexible to play with the kids.
So talk about how your career in in real estate began.
Well, it really began with me getting my position cut from education where I was working. We had the recession that hit, and in 2009-10, my position had gotten cut. I was a school-to-career counselor, and I'd always decided that, you know, education was where I was going to be because I liked coaching, and I liked having my summers off so I could play golf.
Yeah.
And you could make a decent living, especially if you had a significant other that also made a decent living back in the day. So that was my goal. I mean, I got an accounting degree and I can't do my own taxes. So I decided that might not be the direction to go. But, so I was unemployed and I didn't know what to do. And I was watching the house flipping shows and I'd always had an interest in real estate. And a lot of my friends, in the golf community all were in one type of sales job or another. So I thought that might be a direction to go. And my ex-wife actually pushed me to get off the couch and do something. And I got my real estate license.
Oh, there you go. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, something like that.
Right? So who are you working with now?
So in January, I was with a brokerage until 2016, and I decided to break off and open my own brokerage, a boutique brokerage called OnCourse Realty Group. And until till January of this year, I actually got in a recruiting call from another brokerage, and I said, well, the way the market's changed, and I'd had a couple suspects the last couple of years because I didn't have as much technology support as I needed, I decided to make a change, and I interviewed all the different companies, and I settled on EXP Realty. We have an office right here in Concord at 6 Loudon Road, and it's more of a virtual-based company. Like, I can go and I can talk to the state broker in New Mexico right now if I want to. I can pull them up on my phone and I can go and talk to them. I used to call it the video game company because you had an avatar and you had to walk around this like world. And I'm like, that's not for me. But it was such a good decision. Obviously, the commission splits were better than most of the other ones. And there's passive streams of income that you can get, you know, through stock options and things like that, that I won't bore you or your listeners with. But it was a really good decision for myself. And I had a couple agents that came up on board with me. And it's been I've learned quite a bit that I, you know, 13 years in the business.
I would imagine, though, it is a constant learning process in the realty world.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. Yeah. Real estate is constantly evolving and changing, and there's new laws. I mean, I remember when I first got in the business, we were in the recession and everything was a bank-owned foreclosure and a short sale, and you had properties that were on the market for a year to 15 months, and people were giving away BMWs just to get you to come look at the house, you know, so they could sell it. And now it's kind of the flip, that it's on the opposite end of the spectrum where there's an inventory shortage and sellers are getting astronomical numbers, you know, for the properties. And you know, it's just the ebbs and flows of the market. You know?
So how is the market today, specifically here in New Hampshire in the Concord area?
Well, again, there's not as much inventory as we'd like. I think there's still a significant buyer pool out there. People are still looking to buy homes. I mean, obviously, rent prices have dictated that, you know, with the lack of inventory and people needing a place to go and not being able to necessarily afford some homes, landlords have just, you know, found that there's a short of housing in general and they can drive price up. Which actually, and I don't know if I'll actually articulate the scenario as well as I want to for you, but what I've told a lot of people that are looking at buying, like, oh, I want to wait till the interest rates go down. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it would be obviously more beneficial if you had a 5 or 5.5% interest rate instead of a 7% interest rate. However, if you can afford your monthly payment now, you should still purchase a home, because when they do go down to 5 or 5.5%, all those buyers that are still there that have been waiting for that are now going to be competing for that same property. And what's going to happen? That property price is going to go up. So if you can buy now at 6.5 or 7% and afford the payment, when that price goes up, you've just bought yourself equity in the house. Mm. And then you can refinance the house and you can get an even better payment. So you kind of win on both ends of it. Now, it's easier said than done, because people still are going to look at it and go, that's 7% or that's 6.5%. But in terms of how the market's always been, if you were to draw a line from like 1980 until right now, it's still an accelerating line. Now, the actual year to year is squiggling up and down, peaks and valleys. But the constant rate of return is always gone up. So we might be more of a peak, but the interest rates go down, that peak's going to go higher. So you're going to buy some equity with it.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of strategy involved in the real estate world.
Well, I mean, ultimately, I think that's where the benefit of having a quality professional comes in. You know, I know that some people want to do it on their own. And that, hey, it's just like if you get arrested and you're going to go to court, you can defend yourself. Yeah, go for it. But it might be in your best interest to pay for a quality attorney to help, you know, keep you out of jail or defend your interest. Same thing with in the real estate market. And I know that's kind of a interesting
analogy
to use, but I mean, I think that, you know, you could go and you could do it on your own, but you might also be putting, you know, leaving $20,000-$30,000 on the table, you know, because I want to avoid paying my buyer's agent a brokerage fee. You know, it's up to you how you want to handle it. That's the great thing about this country in general, is you get the opportunity. Nobody's telling you have to do this, but if you want representation, it's there for you, and it's proven that it's in everyone's best interest to actually obtain somebody who knows what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would echo those sentiments, having been through it a couple of times in my life. Now, the other day, you reached out to me and mentioned you'd like to talk about the NAR, National Association of Realtors settlement, saying there was some false propaganda out there. So tell us, first of all, about the settlement for those of us who aren't all that familiar with it.
Sure. So there was a lawsuit in the middle of the country. I think it was in Missouri, the Burnett-Stitzer case, if anyone wants to look it up and Google it. And what happened was some sellers were upset because they didn't think they should have had to have paid the buyer's agent fee through their commission to their listing representative.
I'm gonna jump in before you get too far into it. We have to take a break, but we'll come right back and continue with that thought. Jim Silley is here, realtor with the EXP, correct?
Yes, right.
All right, you can find him sometimes at 6 Loudon Road, right?
Yeah, you can find me there in person, or you can go to jimsilleyhomes.com and find me there.
There you go. And we'll be back and talk more about this settlement that is somewhat controversial with Jim Silley right here, WKXL, Kale and Company Live. And we are presented by Northeast Delta Dental, and we will be right back. Welcome back on this Wednesday morning, I should say. Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Jim Silley is in studio. You've probably heard his name if you pay any attention to the golf world, because he's one of the top amateur golfers in the state of New Hampshire, and right now an assistant coach of basketball at Pembroke Academy. And we will get back to our realty story, but another successful season there.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. It was really great to. I wasn't sure how active I was going to be this year and going back, because I do have a couple small children at home that I have full time. So, Mike Donnell, our head coach, said we had such success, we got to run it back another year, and we had a couple players returning from our team that lost in the finals the year before. And I said, I'll come this summer. And well, and you know how it is. You get hooked, and next thing you know, I'm there every day. So, we lost in the semifinals. It was a team that could have certainly won it all. It was a close game. We lost to Hanover, but just a fantastic group of kids and a really meaningful experience to me.
I know Hanover didn't treat you well during the regular season either. They were tough.
Yeah, those Martin Luther King Day games, at noontime aren't necessarily didn't fit into our team's sleep patterns, I think, and we looked like we were sleepwalking on the court.
But at any rate, a very successful season for you and head coach Mike Donnell. Now, you guys going to be back next year?
That's the intent. Yeah. We're looking at it. We've got a pretty heavy summer lined up, and we return almost all of our guys, and. Obviously, we graduate Joe Fitzgerald, who I think was the player of the year this year. And he was runner-up in the voting for it for Division II. But certainly just a fantastic – scored over 550 points this year. So you lose that, but we bring back everything else, including his little brother, who's going to be fantastic, and a couple sophomores that we anticipate taking a big jump going into junior year. So I think we'll be right back in the mix again.
And you can't beat the coaching with you two guys, and you have a female assistant as well.
Julia's great. I mean, she's I talk to her more than I talk to Mike. I mean, it's funny. We have a joke between us. She says, I never thought I would have, she's 23 years old. I never thought that I'd have a 43-year-old, best friend in life. And I said, well, I didn't think I'd have a 23-year-old, female best friend either. But here we are,
Yeah, it's amazing how, we go through twists and turns in life. And, it is interesting. And we will get back to that real estate story as well. Yeah. But it is interesting, how many women now are coaching boys or men's teams, and even at the NBA level, you see some female assistant coaches now.
Well, I mean, look at Becky Bonner. I mean, she's the top executive with the Orlando Magic, and I know, there's so many. And just going back to Julia, I mean, Julia will coach varsity, probably boys basketball at some point in her life. She's extremely good. I think that she could have very easily won the JV Coach of the Year award this year. The team went 16-2 during the regular season. The only team they lost to was Merrimack Valley. I mean, just was who had a much more junior-heavy JV team than the freshman that she had. So, she's very good. I mean, she teaches a lot of the things that I want her to teach, especially defensively. Mike kind of gives her free rein as what he wants her to do offensively, but I kind of said, do these things defensively and you'll be good. And she implements everything. And the way she controls the kids, and they don't look at her as a female, certainly. They look at her as coach, and that's all you really can ask for.
Exactly. And many times the D is the key.
It is for us. Yeah. I mean, that's what we preach. You know, we know we're very fortunate in Pembroke because it's a basketball community, and the kids have all the AAUs, and they go to the health club. You know, Cap City, they're over behind the Red Blazer every day after practice, and they're there every day when I go over there just to lift weights myself or do whatever. And they're very offensively skilled, and we recognized that last year. Yep. You know, when Mike took the job and I came in and looked at the first open gym, I said, oh my God, you got handed the keys to the Cadillac here. I got to come in and help you make sure you don't steer it off a cliff, you know? But defensively, you know, that separates. That's what gets you to semifinals and into championship games.
And I think if you looked at the NCAA men's tournament this year, the defensive adjustments that UConn made in every game, including the victory on Monday night for the national championship. I mean, Dan Hurley just did a masterful job with that team.
Unbelievable, and I really hope that he stays. I think that he will. I mean, obviously John Calipari leaving Kentucky and going to Kansas, that opens up a premium job, and I'm sure that they'll try to seduce him away from UConn, but he is fantastic. I mean, I heard something. If you look the last 2 years, not that we want to get into sports betting or anything because I don't do that, but they covered the spread every game in the tournament the last 2 years. That's unheard of.
That's amazing.
You know?
Well, they won every game this year by double digits.
Double digits.
Yeah. And had the biggest point differential in tournament history.
I mean, the championship game with Purdue, it felt more like a coronation than it did an actual contest.
You know, you're right. That was a good way to put it because it really did. You never felt really, and I'm a UConn fan, but you never really felt as if Purdue was in that game.
No, maybe the first 10 minutes it was close, and you just kept waiting for
the
run.
But you knew that separation was going to come.
Exactly.
You just could feel it. All right, so we talked a little basketball. Let's get back to this settlement now that came out last month at some point, and you know, just explain it again, what took place, the National Association of Realtors settlement and some of the talk that has taken place after that.
So basically, and I'll try to keep it as layman's as I can here.
Please do, for the host especially.
the Burnett Stitzer case, the plaintiffs said that they were upset they were paying buyer agency fees, basically paying to have somebody represent somebody against them in the transaction. And they said that the listing agents and the buying agents were in collusion to set these fees and all of this, a lot more to it than that. But anyways, that's the gist of it. And realistically, real estate's done differently across the entire country anyways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, New Hampshire specifically, and I can touch to this because that's where my license is and this is what I know. New Hampshire, we've been on our listing agreements, we've been talking about everything's always been negotiable. And, you know, when we negotiate our fee, whatever percent it's going to be, at the bottom, we ask, what do you want to pay to a buyer's agent? Because 86% of people that bought homes last year bought with an agent. So if you're not going to pay them, you're eliminating 86% of the market from looking at your home potentially. Mm-hmm. And what do you think that's going to do to your price? So it's always been in everyone's best interest to pay the cooperating brokerage fee. But that fee's always been negotiable in New Hampshire. Now, this case took place in Missouri. I don't know what the law was. I don't know what their listing agreements look like. I don't know that stuff down there. But essentially what happened was they got the right jury.
That always helps.
They got the right verdict that they wanted. And it was a $1.something billion settlement or $1 billion, you know, a judgment.
Yeah.
So then you saw there were two firms, and I think it was Coldwell Banker and Remax. I'm not 100% sure on that. It could have been Keller Williams. There's two major firms across the country that were named in the suit, and they both settled. And then the National Association of Realtors a few weeks ago settled as well, saying, you know what, we can tie this up. We can fight this. We probably can win, because we don't think we did anything nefarious. They settled and said, we didn't have any wrongdoing here, but we're going to settle for 400 and something million, and all of the realtors that are part of our association across the country are going to, you're not going to be able, none of these copycat lawsuits are going to be able to come out and come after them. So that's in in a nutshell, what happened and what the settlement was for. Now, in terms of the settlement, which this is where it could affect some of the consumers, they said that no longer will you be able to pay a cooperating brokerage fee or present that on the multiple listing service. So for us, as whenever we list property, we put it into the multiple listing service, which uses an IDX feed and disperses it out to all the company's websites, to Zillow, to Homes.com, Realtor.com, all these different websites. On that, in the backside of it, the part that the public doesn't see is where we would put what our buyer's broker fee would be, or buyer cooperating brokerage compensation. You can't do that anymore, according to this website, which will take place in July. So when you look at some of these major news outlets saying 6% commissions are dead, you don't have to pay them anymore, you know, and it's going to be so much cheaper for people to buy and sell homes. Well, that wasn't what the settlement was. Right. That's just kind of the clickbait thing to go to their website.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, everybody does things like that in business, right? You want to drive people to your product, to your place.
Exactly.
So, and I can expand upon it more too, Ken. I mean,
so there is a little bit of misinformation out there.
Very much so, yes. Yeah. And I can certainly clean that up for you.
Okay. Well, you know we have to take a break and make a little money here at WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Jim Silly is here. Realtor, coach, great golfer, great guy, and we'll be back with more. We're presented by Northeast Delta Dental. Great to have you here on this Wednesday morning. Stand by for more. Welcome back on this Wednesday, Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We are presented by Northeast Delta Dental. We have Jim Silly in the house. We're talking real estate, which is a topic we don't talk about a whole lot here, pretty much because the host is pretty dumb when it comes to it, comes to the topic. But Jim is not. Jim is a realtor and has been for quite some time. And there was a settlement concerning the National Association of Realtors that Jim touched on and talked about during the last segment. How does it impact buyers?
Yeah, so that's, as I was touching base on before the break, so sellers aren't allowed to put in the, seller's agent aren't allowed to put in the MLS cooperating buyers fees, mm-hmm. right, for their brokers. So now, when you want to buy a house and you come to me and say, Jim, I need your help, I've always done this myself anyway, so this isn't anything new for me, but I'm going to sit down and have a consultation with you. I'm going to describe my services for you, and I'm going to tell you what my fee is. Now, here's the change, and it's not really a change because it's still, if you really think about it, how the math works, it's still it's still the same way. It's just how it's being presented that's different. Say my fee is X percent. And normally on the MLS, it would tell you what percent they were going to pay. So, you know, for antitrust reasons, I'm not going to go throwing out numbers and get myself in trouble here on the air. But what they're saying now is that the buyer's obligated to pay you that fee because it's on the contract. That's still the same thing. And that's still negotiable. Like, it could be A, B, or C percent, depending upon the level of service that the professional is going to give you.
Now, is it a fee or a percentage?
It could be a fee as well. Yeah. It depends upon how you want to do business and how the consumer wants to negotiate with you on that. Right. You know, for myself, it's always been a percentage. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the other side of the transaction has been paying a percentage, and it might be the whole thing. And what's really happened is there's been a lot of people that have just accepted what the other side's paying, and they haven't really negotiated on their own behalf. They're just saying, I'll just do it for whatever's being listed in the co-broke. Well, that's really not giving your buyer the best representation possible either. So you really need to come up to terms with whatever your fee is going to be. Now, where this is going to affect the consumer is that, say your percentage is one thing, and the seller decides now, because they've done all the clickbaiting, they think they don't have to pay you anymore. So now that fee is going to have to come out of your pocket. But that's not necessarily true either, because they're still allowing us, as listing brokers to be able to offer compensation to a buyer's broker if the seller wants to. It just can't be in the multiple listing service as a unilateral fee.
Okay.
Right? It just means that if you're a selling agent and I'm a buying agent, I got to pick up the phone and say, hey, Ken, I got a buyer looking to put an offer in on your property at XYZ Main Street. What are you off? Is your seller offering a buyer broker compensation fee? And if so, what is it? Okay. And then, oh yeah, Jim, we're offering out this percent. Okay, that's great. That covers my fee. The buyer's not paying out of their pocket. We write that into the contract. It's all said and done. Right? Just like we've always been able to do. It's just now, instead of it being implied in the multiple listing service, it's now having to be communicated.
Okay.
So, and you know, I think that for the most part, I think there's other ways that you could pay me as well. All right. So say, you know, they're paying a portion of my fee and there's still some remainder left over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of lenders have the capability to issue lender credits. You can also finance the fee, you know, say I'm just going to throw a number out because this isn't doing anything antitrust. You know, there's $3,000 difference, right? And you're buying a $500,000 house and you've got to come up out of pocket with an extra $3,000 to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we go, you know, 503 on the contract, and $3,000 comes back as a concession to pay.
Yeah.
You know, as it basically you're financing the $3,000 over 30 years, which equals 40 cents, you know, or something like that in your mortgage payment.
Yeah.
So there's ways around it. It's not changing the way any of us are going to do business. Like I said, the whole 6% commissions are dead. Well, you know, I mean, that's not necessarily true. If somebody agrees to it, it's still there. You know, I mean,
yeah.
it's more, that stuff's been more of a scare tactic, and it's really been misappropriated and inappropriate, I think is the best way to put it, in terms of the journalism and how they've been presenting it.
Well, you know, the media likes their clickbait, you know.
Fortunately, I think I do know.
And
now.
I guess people do too, you know, who consume it. So, you know, there is, no matter what you're talking about, there's usually a lot of misleading clickbait out there, you know, on social media these days.
Yeah, and I think, Ken, that people, you pay for what you get. You know, like, I made the reference to the, you know, the attorneys, but like, when the attorney charges you, are you questioning the attorney's fees? No, you know the attorney's doing his job. He's a professional. He's taking classes. There's a standard there. You've had the discussion up front with him about what he's going to do for you. You know what the fee is up front, and people pay the fee. It's the same thing in real estate. I mean, realtors have been doing the job since, you know, I always say 200 years. I mean, it might be plus or minus that, really. But I mean, like, the profession's been around extremely
sure.
long.
I mean,
I think the, you know, 1813 or something was the code of ethics written by the National Association of Realtors. I mean, it's been around for a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, it's obviously evolving as the years go by, but still generally the same principles involved.
You know, everybody always thinks, I mean, this is probably portioned more towards realtors. Oh, the sky's falling here. What are we going to do? We got to change our business practices. The same thing happened back in, you know, after the recession when TRID came out with their guidelines for lending. You know, the lenders, oh my God, what's going to happen? This is terrible. Well, it actually became a really good thing because you weren't having these deals that were blowing up at the closing table. You were the lenders were having to get the closing disclosure out 3 days prior to, you know, the closing to the buyer so they could review it and they could say that they understand it. So, you know, 3 hours before closing, they're not changing the numbers on the contract and the buyer's having to scramble to try to find more funds. You know, that was happening in the past and it was a safety. So we all thought that was going to be this huge change. It was going to mess up a lot of deals. It didn't. Real estate continued on. It continued the way that it always has. People were represented. People were lent money. You know, nothing changed. It's the same thing that's going to happen now.
Do you find yourself dealing with more people that are currently living in the state or some that are coming across borders from Massachusetts, let's say, to find a home in New Hampshire?
Lately, I would say some of the buyers that I've dealt with have come from out of state. I think, you know, obviously the listings that we're taking in state because we kind of have to. My license doesn't let me go sell in Mass. But I think primarily still I'm dealing with homeowners in New Hampshire. I think that the last few years it was much more out-of-state people. There was, you know, they could sell in around the city and make astronomical numbers, and they can work remote and come live up on the lake for the same number, you know, live in paradise and still be able to work, you know, go to the city, you know, take a 2-hour drive to Boston once a once a week and, you know, make money that way. So
yeah,
I think that was really the reason for the real spike in hike and property value, is because they were selling for astronomical numbers out here and then able to pay cash for our homes here. And it was outpricing some of our local buyers, you know, and rates had to go up to try to stop some of that and to try to, you know, kind of to quell it out. And you know, unfortunately, they've gotten to a spot now where we're, it's like the same with inflation, you know, everything's kind of up so high. Everybody's kind of like, yeah, what am I going to do? How can I afford this?
Well, of course, New Hampshire has no state income tax. It has no sales tax. But it does have, I would have to think, some of the higher property taxes in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's right. And I know that the state has been trying to bring all the towns up to equalization for their assessments, trying to get all the land value. So people think, oh my God, my assessment went up. I didn't do anything to my house. Well, it's really that the state is trying to get the land values to be consistent with the other states in the area. And that's what it is. If you really want to, you know, go fight the tax fight, you know, with your town, you may want to go in and you may want to look at, you know, why, you know, what's the state, what's the town portion of my tax and what's the state portion of my tax? Not what my assessment is, but what's my tax rate? And in a lot of towns, you'll find it usually kind of goes back to education, which, you know, my brother's a teacher, you know, I've worked in education forever and they are drastically underpaid as far as I'm concerned. Yep. However, there's a lot of grants that the government has or that the states can get. And I think that that's a target area that I think that most people should look at. Like, what are we doing to get the free money from the government to help keep our educational component down in our taxes? Because that's what's keeping your tax rate up. At least I know, I mean, that's an opinion. I guess I shouldn't say that for a fact, but I'm, you know, looking at
But that is true. And of course, there's the consideration of police and fire as well, public employees. And
right.
So and certainly, I mean, you have to make up for it in some way.
Right.
I mean,
well, and you know, and if you look at a lot of the, if you break down a tax, you know, the tax rate, a lot of the times you'll see that the towns are pretty consistent. It's usually the school. If you've got a higher tax rate in a town, it's usually the school's portion that's driving it up.
Right.
So,
and you are seeing all the time that cities and towns are making cuts in education where, you know, it's tough. It's tough to do that, and it's probably not a good thing. But it's something, I guess, that has to be done in some situations. So Jim Silley is with us, and we're talking real estate, among other things. And we will be back for our final segment right after these words on a Wednesday morning. It's Kale and Company Live, WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com, presented by Northeast Delta Dental. And we'll be right back. Welcome back on this Wednesday morning, Kale and Company Live on WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Golfers Day, by the way, also known as Golf Day, and we're, you know, it's Masters Eve is what it is. And I know great golfers like Jim Silley and real hackers like myself love to follow the Masters. I mean, you know, you follow certain golf tournaments, and obviously the Masters has to be one of them. Have you ever been to Augusta?
I have not been to Augusta. I lived in South Carolina in Charleston in 2003, 2004, after I graduated from college. I was cleaning clubs. I was going to be a golf pro. I was going to be the man, and that didn't work out. But I ran out of money and came home. But at the end of the day, we had an opportunity to go, and my buddy had opportunity to get tickets for like a Wednesday practice round. And I was like, I'm game. Let's go. We'll get the day off of work. We'll fly. We'll go over to Augusta. It was only like a 3-hour drive from Charleston. It wasn't that far. And he's like, yeah, that guy wanted $150 a ticket. I'm like, my jaw drops. And now he sold them to somebody else. Like, oh, my God. What are we doing here?
Oh,
it's Augusta,
man.
National.
So that's as close as you got, huh?
It was as close as I got to go. And of course, you know, a good friend of mine is a rep for About Golf, the tour simulator company. So if you go to Beaver Meadow and play in their indoor simulator or Pembroke Pines or any of the local courses, those are the simulators that he reps. And And so he goes to Augusta every year to do demos and stuff and gets to go on the grounds.
Well, couldn't he take you along 1 year, Jim?
Well, I tried, but his, you know, his wife was more important than I was, apparently.
But would you like to get there someday?
It's one of the things that it's on the bucket list, yeah. I mean, obviously everybody wants to play there. That's challenging. I know quite a few people who have played there. But it just to be on the grounds and to feel the magic of Augusta National, from what everybody says, it's far hillier than you would understand. Like the 18th hole is like straight uphill. Nobody, TV doesn't do it justice, I guess, for what it really is. But
wow. But it would be quite an atmosphere. And I understand one of the things I hear about it, I have never been there, but that the concession prices are still very low, like they were like in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, that's been one thing. I mean, obviously, if you're a member at Augusta National, you don't have to worry about how much you're paying. I mean, the CEO of all these Fortune 500 companies, and Condoleezza Rice is a member there. I mean, you've got some pretty important people that are members of Augusta National. But that's one of the things they've always wanted to do is they don't view the people watching the fans as fans. They view them as patrons, and they view them as it's very steeped in tradition there, so they've always wanted to make it an experience for everybody to be there.
Yeah, and I guess for a golfer or just a fan of the game, it is the ultimate place to go.
Oh yeah, I mean tomorrow I'll be sitting on sitting in my office at my desk with my laptop up, my iPad, and my TV will probably have it on. You know, we watching from Masters.com live at the Amen Corner,
and you and millions of other golf aficionados around the country and around the world as well. And this is a tournament that's going to feature both the PGA and LIV golfers. So what do you make of that controversy, Jim?
I just think money rules the world, unfortunately. I think LIV is not for me. I'm more of a traditionalist, I guess. I understand the party aspect of it, and it's supposed to be more fun. But the shotgun starts, like, how do I mean, like, you're on Sunday, and you want to see what happens at the 17th, 18th hole, and the guy might be coming from behind, and he might be finishing on 13. And to me, it's weird.
I didn't realize they had shotgun starts. Wow.
Yeah, and limited fields. I mean, I think the great thing about the PGA Tour has always been that you earned your way to get there.
Yep.
You know, now, don't get me wrong. I think that what's happened has been beneficial to the PGA Tour in a lot of ways because it's caused them to start paying the players a little bit more. You know, the purses have certainly gone up. They've had to reevaluate some of the stuff. They've gotten better at, you know, targeting sponsors that will help them with that. And they haven't been as complacent being the only dog in town, you know, only show in town. But I think it's also put a pretty big divisive stain on the sport. And I think most of us as golf fans are kind of over it. And I think LIV's going to end up going away eventually anyways. Their numbers just aren't there when it comes to watching anything. And when you've got your most prized asset and John Rahm this week sitting there at his press conference at Augusta saying how he missed playing in Phoenix in his hometown. He missed playing in the Tournament of Champions with all the guys. He missed playing at TPC Sawgrass in the Players' Championship. And how he thinks that if they could get LIV to play 72 hole events, it would be better for certain things. It's like you could tell when your best guy is out there talking, basically saying, I think I made a mistake, you know, without saying it out loud. I think that that's just going to help. I think the PGA Tour is in a really strong position right now, especially with Fenway Sports Group being part of the.
What did they invest? They made a huge investment into it, like
billions,
$3 billion dollars or something like that. And, it didn't make some Red Sox fans very happy that John Henry's money's going to the PGA Tour, but at any rate, it's certainly a boost for the PGA Tour. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, as a Red Sox fan, I've been like, what are we doing the last few years, and why aren't we spending? Like, we're not the Tampa Bay Rays. We're not the Yankees. So
we're
a
major market team.
But we're a major market team, and hey, they're off to a good start this year. So I guess maybe they figured something out. But
so far, so good. We'll see how long that lasts. Right. But wasn't there some talk recently about a merger between the LIV and the PGA Tour?
Yeah, so there was a framework agreement in place last June. It kind of came out of nowhere. And I guess, you know, they had until December 31st to kind of pull something together. And they extended that. And I guess they're still talking, but both sides are pretty far apart, I guess, on the dollar and cents and what it's going to mean and how players are going to be able to go between the two tours. And the PGA Tour took a pretty strong stance on it, I guess. And Fenway Sports Group and that whole conglomerate coming in and investing money into it has kind of slowed down those talks, I think, and put the PGA Tour in a little stronger position than they had been.
Yeah, exactly. And you talk about John Rahm. Some of the golfers that have left probably do. I know they're making huge money, but they probably do have regrets. Shotgun starts, and what do they only have, 36-hole tournament? 54.
Right.
54, yeah.
Yeah,
54.
Yeah, LIV actually means 54.
That's right.
I didn't know that until like halfway through their second year.
Yeah. 54-hole tournaments instead of the traditional 72. So.
And no cuts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, that's one of the great things about the tour.
Sure, yeah.
You know, you earn your money. You earn your play. I mean, that just, and you earn your way onto the tour with the feeder programs and, you know, the Corn Ferry Tour and things like that.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. So, you're looking forward to the State Am this year?
Yeah. I'm actually looking more forward, I think, to the New England Amateur this year, which I've never played in, but it's at Laconia Country Club, which is my home course. So, I think I've got a long way to go with my game. I was joking. I don't know if I said it to you beforehand. I was talking to somebody on the phone coming down here. I made my first swing of the year yesterday. I took a ball out in my backyard. I was going to hit it in the woods, grabbed a 7-iron, made a few swings, got a few of the kinks out of the back, and I went to hit it, and I hit it about 4 inches fat. It went about 60 yards, 15 yards right of target, and no more than 15 feet off the ground. So I was like, well, that's off to a good start.
Yeah. Did you get rid of that 7-iron?
It went back in the bag. Yeah. I just cleaned it off and said, time to go cook dinner for the kids.
Yeah. So when is that tournament? When is the New England?
It's actually the week after the stadium.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's like, I think it's the 16th, 17th, and 18th of July at Laconia. And so hopefully I'll have a long week the week before and be successful at Concord and then take a couple days to sleep and recover, because that's the one thing. I mean, that's obviously a lot of golf, and they allow us to take carts, so physically it shouldn't be as imposing as it is, but you know, when you're playing, you know, what's it, 8 rounds of golf in 6 days?
Yeah.
When I won, I'll never forget how just worn out I was afterwards. I mean, I went out and played Canterbury Woods like the Wednesday after I won the tournament, and I think I shot 84. It was like 12 over par at a course that I couldn't hit the ball solid. I couldn't think straight. I was just like, I didn't really even want to be out there. I was like, I'm still tired, you know.
But don't you think it is really more of a mental game?
Oh, it absolutely is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no. Yeah. I mean, when I lost in the finals to Brandon Gillis a couple years ago at Abenaki, there's zero reason physically that I was in the finals. That was 100%. There were multiple times during the time. I mean, the round of 16, I was 4 down after 9 holes and came back and won. I squared it up and ended up winning on the 18th hole. And you know, it was all mental. I mean, the kid started getting ahead of himself, and I just knew if I could grind 1 or 2 holes out that he would start feeling the pressure, and then you win a hole because you play a good hole, and next thing you know, the thing's tied up. I think there's a lot of cerebral things you can do, little gamesmanship things here and there that you learn throughout the years. Not that you want to be, you know, unetiquette or anything else, but I mean, if you're standing a little close to somebody and they ask you to back up, you know, on the tee, you probably stand a little closer the next time.
All kinds of mental games being played out on that course. Jim Silley, it was great to have you in studio.
Kenny.
Hope to have you back in the not too distant future.
Oh, absolutely. This is always fun.
It'd be great. We'll get the big guy in here as well.
Oh, you know he likes to talk.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he does. We're talking about Mike Donnell, of course, the head coach of basketball for boys at Pembroke Academy. And Jim is the assistant. And one of the assistants, anyway.
Yeah.
And the other one is?
Julia Velotto. LeBrec now. She just got married.
Ah.
Oh, okay. My apologies, Julia.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Love to see women getting involved in coaching at all levels of basketball, men's and women's basketball. Jim, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ken.
Great to have you with us.
Had a blast.
And thanks to our producer, Andrew Gibson, and to you for listening on this Wednesday morning. Always, folks, look on the bright side of life. Have a great Wednesday, everyone. We're presented by Northeast Delta Dental.